You know, you guys aren't quite as scary as you were a couple of weeks ago. I kept texting Katrina. I've had another terrible dream about preaching. The first week, I had this crazy dream that I got up to speak, and Scott stretched this curtain across the front, and I had to, like, stand behind the curtain to... That was kind of a weird one. And then the next time, I had a dream that I was up here in my dressing gown. So Katrina actually texted me Sunday morning. She's like, "You're dressed, right? You're..." I'm like, "Yes, yes." So no nightmares this week, so I must be feeling a little more comfortable. So that's good. All right, so we're in Philippians. We've got our recipe for joy. I'm excited. Okay, so we started with perspective. If you remember, that was our first ingredient, was perspective. When we've got that temporary perspective that's based on our own point of view and what we're going through, and we lose sight of how good God is and how great he is, how awesome he is, the amazing things that he's done, we forget that there's an eternal reality that is so much bigger than the temporary reality that we're living. And if you remember the remedy for that, if we're lacking in perspective, one of the things that we can do is we can spend time with our friends that build us up in the kingdom, you know, those encouraging people that you know that can come alongside and give you a good word. We can remember those great things that he's done in the past, and since he's the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow, he's going to continue to be good in the future. And we can worship. That's probably one of the best ways to get our perspective back, is to worship our eternal, wonderful God, and it helps to realign our emotions. Then the next one was unity. Unity brought about by God's love. So that was last week. We've got one mind, one heart. We get to have unity with him and with one another. And if you remember, unforgiveness is going to quench that unity. Unforgiveness is going to take that unity right out of the picture. And so we've got to be able to see each other as Christ sees us. Now, Abs was asking me if the next, what I was going to spell with these, you know, we've got perspective, we've got unity. He was asking me, okay, well, what's the next one? What are we going to spell? I hope it's not going to be puke, you know. So no, it is not K, there's nothing, but it's close. Okay, but to introduce the next ingredient, I'm going to tell a little story. I think a lot of times you guys get Scott's perspective, obviously, and hear things from his life. So now I'm going to share a couple things from my life. So I'm going to take you back to the summer of 1988. This was before a lot of you were born. I'm aware of that. That's fine. Okay, summer of 1988. It was right before my last year of high school. And I was getting ready to go to Jamaica, on a mission trip. Okay, now here's the dream, okay? When I say Jamaica, what are you all picturing? Sandy beaches. Cool, there you go. Sandy beaches, palm trees, you know, just sitting there in a little lounge with a little coconut drink, you know, with a little umbrella in it, just basking in the sun. So this is what we were all, there were about 15 of us that went. And this is what we were all thinking. Okay, we're going to, sure, well, we were doing like a holiday program for some school kids. So we're thinking, okay, well, we'll do that in the morning. And then in the afternoon, we're going to go to the beach. And we're just going to, you know, we'll all come back tanned. It'll be awesome. This will be great. Okay, so we fly from California to Florida to save money. We like left at midnight because, you know, the flights are a little bit cheaper. And then so we're all totally whacked out at the airport in Florida. It's like, oh my goodness, like what time zone are we in? Get on a plane, go to Jamaica, get out of the airport, and immediately, you know, being, we were all from California, and so it's quite dry there. So immediately this humidity just hits us. I think you guys probably experienced that in Hawaii a couple of weeks ago. This humidity, just, and it just clings to you, you know? It's like you just stepped out of the shower. Y'all cram into this un-air-conditioned bus. We drive by the beach. We turn inland, and we go in for an hour. This was not my idea. Wait a minute, no, I know I said I was coming to serve God, but I really was coming for the beach. Okay, it got worse. It got worse. Okay, the heat, the humidity, we're miles, hours from the beach. We get to this house. There's no running water in the house that we're staying in, which is, you know, kind of a thing for girls with 80s hair, you know, so no running water. I was the first one to step into the house. I flipped the light on, and of course it was the, cockroaches scattering everywhere. And thank goodness I had the presence of mind to not say anything, because none of the girls would have slept in the house if I had said a thing. So I was just like, okay, shush, you know, no. The food was quite interesting. I think we had goat, but I'm not sure. You couldn't really tell. It was like mystery meat in this curry stuff. The water was from this big rain reservoir. We had to treat it with iodine, and it just tasted terrible. We mixed something in it, kind of like Raro, but it didn't help. Bucket showers, that was fun. And we had to walk everywhere in this oppressive humidity. And the roads, I want you guys all to turn around and look at Tupani. The roads, the dirt, was all the color of his shirt, okay? So we would walk, I don't know, at least a kilometer to the school where we were doing our holiday program, and we're kicking up dirt, kicking up dust, and because you're so hot and sticky, so you know how when you eat those little bluebird twisty things or burger rings, you know, and your fingers get all coated with, okay, that was us, like head to toe. Yeah, you look like a little twisty. I had to, it was the ultimate spray-on tan. It was terrible. But I had to throw away like almost all my clothes when I got back, because with the sweat and the dust, and it just stained everything. It was just awful. So much of our ministry got swallowed up by all of the complaining that we all did. We had fighting within the team. I mean, we were all just constantly arguing and bickering with each other. We really lost sight of what we were doing and why. Complaining sucked the joy right out of that experience. And it was pretty amazing. I can still look at some of the pictures that I have and remember some of the highlights. But the thing that sticks out to me the most is how much we complained. My poor youth leader. I actually think we had one woman quit after that trip. She just had enough of us. It was pretty bad. And it was quite interesting. The last night of the trip, we actually did end up getting to go to the beach, like the last night. And so we were all sitting up on the roof of the house, and we were talking about how terrible the whole week had been, or 10 days, I can't remember how long we were there. And we figured out after the fact, you know, after it all, that it was because of all of our complaining. And we just, one person would start, and then we would just, you know, we'd keep going. And we just really lost all of the joy. So fast forward with me here 20 plus years, almost 30, and I find that almost nothing will make a difficult or challenging experience worse than complaining. If you will look with me in Philippians chapter 2, verse 14, if you need a Bible, by the way, I've got a couple back there. Owen or Paul will pass it out a few. Does anybody need a Bible? No, are we all good? We're all pretty good? Cool. Sorry about that. Should have mentioned that. There we go. Excellent. So Philippians chapter 2. Paul here entreats the Philippians in verse 14. Do all things without grumbling or disputing. I think the New King James says, without complaining, that you may be blameless and innocent, children of God, without blemish, in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. And I was looking at that this week, and I was thinking, how often do I follow this advice? To do all things without complaining, all things without grumbling. Does anybody else find themselves like nitpicking and grumbling and complaining about the most everyday, you know, the most mundane things, every aspect of life? Today is a beautiful day, but I've been complaining about winter like since February. You know, it's cold, it's wet. The circumstances, the food, the company, everything. I mean, you name it, I will complain about it. And I find that complaining absolutely ruins the next ingredient for joy, which is contentment. So we've got perspective, unity, and I know I'm all, it's not going to spell puke, but it might spell puce. I better avoid the E next time, huh? Okay. And contentment goes beyond just being satisfied with what we have. Contentment is active and it is participatory. It doesn't just happen to us, okay? Contentment is not just something that you just kind of sit back, all righty, now I'm content. It is actually something that needs to be pursued. Paul says later on in Philippians, in chapter 4, verses 11 and 12, he says, not that I'm speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. I know how to be brought low, and I know how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. We're just going to stop there for just a minute here. So contentment. Paul here, he's under house arrest, right? He's in Rome. He's unable to go out and preach. He's unable to go and visit all of these churches that he's helped start in all these different cities. This is Paul's passion. And yet he writes this letter of Philippians, and it is so full of joy that you would never know unless he told us. You would never know that he was in prison. He doesn't even mention it until, I don't know, like verse 13, I think, is when the first time he talks about, oh no, I guess it is a little earlier, verse 4. That if I wrote Philippians, that would be the first thing I would say. By the way, I'm in prison for all of you, just so you know. And it's terrible here. It's really dusty or whatever. But Paul doesn't do that. The whole book of Philippians is filled with joy, even though he's in prison. And so we've got to realize that it's a supernatural joy. It's going beyond his circumstances. And it goes beyond that Pollyanna view of looking on the bright side of things. Are you all familiar with that movie or the book Pollyanna about the girl? I think it's Haley Mills, and everything that bad that happens to her, she finds the bright side of something, you know? And it's like, that's kind of a nice concept, but contentment goes beyond that. It goes beyond just finding the bright side of things. It's actually actively looking for the good things that God is doing. And Paul here is strengthened. He says in finishing up here in chapter 4, that secret that he was talking about, I've learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. In verse 13, he says, I can do all things through him, through Christ who strengthens me. This is Paul's secret. This is how he's strengthened, is by Christ. So there's obviously a lot of ways I think Paul's strengthened, but one of the ways that I really want to look at today is that's linked to his contentment is by this attitude of thankfulness that Paul has throughout the whole book. So let's backtrack just a little bit here. You know, so we've got like this big pot of joy, right? And we've got perspective, okay? So we've got perspective that we're throwing in, and perspective gets ruined by focus on self, right? But it gets lifted up by worshiping God. Unity, we're going to throw that in. Unity gets wrecked by unforgiveness, but strengthened by agape love. And then here we've got contentment that we're adding. It gets derailed by complaining, and it gets embraced by thankfulness. Because we're told again and again in the New Testament, throughout the New Testament, that we've got to put off the old way of doing things, right? The way of doing things before we were saved. We've got to put off that old way and put on that new way. And that is the resurrection life, is putting on that way of Christ, that mind of Christ. And so thankfulness is really going to be that key to finding contentment, which is the key to finding joy. At the very beginning of the book, Paul says, "I thank my God for you." Just a few little words at the beginning of the letter set the tone for the entire book. This is why it's so full of joy, because Paul starts out with this attitude of thankfulness. It's not Paul's laundry list of everything that's wrong with where he's at, everything that's going, he's going through, all these guards, you know, they're making fun of me or whatever. This is an epistle of all the things that he is thankful for. It's a letter of all of the things he's thankful for. And as you go through and you read the book, you read this letter, he's thankful for the Philippians themselves. He's thankful for every opportunity that he has to see the gospel go forward. He's thankful for his fellow workers, for Timothy and Epaphroditus. In chapter 3, he's thankful that he and we are no longer under the law. He's thankful that there are wonderful treasures that are worth striving for as we follow Christ. He's thankful that our citizenship is in heaven. He's thankful that we don't have to be anxious for everything or anything, that we can lay all of those things down before God's throne of grace. Again and again, he lays out all of the things that he's thankful for. I think about in the Gospels when there were the crowds of people that were around Jesus, and they were listening to him teach and share, and he's sharing about the things of the kingdom of heaven to them. And, you know, they've been there for hours, and they all start to get hungry. I think you guys all know this particular story, and the disciples are like, just send them away, let them go get some food, you know. And you know, Jesus, in some of the accounts, Jesus says, well, you know, you feed them, because he knew what he was going to do. And if you remember, what he did do was he found what he did have, which was just a couple of fish, a couple of loaves. And he gave thanks for those things. He gave thanks for them. And it was, I believe, it was in that giving of thanks that it was able to be multiplied. And it's in, I think, those situations in our life where we're lacking and where we don't have what we need. But we've just got maybe that little mustard seed of whatever it is that God's given us. And as we are thankful for that, we can see him then go before us. So I would really encourage you that if you find yourself struggling with contentment, if you're finding like this is kind of hard, I don't know if I can do this, you know, I don't know if I can just be content. You don't know all these things that are happening to me and what's going on in my life. I would encourage you, much the same way that Paul has listed all of the things that he's thankful for, I would really encourage you to make your own list, to start out. Write it down. I mean, physically write down. And at first, you know, it's kind of an interesting exercise. You sit down with your piece of paper and you're like, okay, I'm thankful for salvation. I'm thankful, you know, maybe just a few things. But after a while, it's like, you can't stop. I can't stop writing out the things that I'm thankful for, the things that God has done. And I would challenge you to not get tears in your eyes as you think of all of the wonderful things that God has done and the ways that he has blessed us. So it is not a fruitless exercise. It is very, very fruitful to remind yourself what God has done. And it's kind of funny. I don't think we really need confirmation from the world, but it's often funny when science backs up what God has already said, you know, a couple of thousand years ago. I was reading a secular journal, and I didn't write down I was supposed to look it up, and I forgot to, but I was reading this secular journal. It was like the American Journal of Psychiatry or Psychology or something like that. And it was talking about how they had done this study on people who were happy and people who had, they called it happiness. And they were finding that the number one indicator of people reporting that they had a happy life was how grateful they were, how thankful they were. That was directly linked to whether or not they experienced happiness and joy, was how thankful they were for the things in their life. Okay. So, who here has read The Hiding Place, a story about Corrie Ten Boom? A couple of us, huh? She was a woman who went to a concentration camp during World War II for hiding Jews in her house. They saw hundreds of Jewish people off to safety, got them identification cards, got them smuggled out of Holland, was it? Was that what they, where they lived? Yep. So she and her sister ended up in a concentration camp, and they were praying together one day, her and her sister, Betsy, and they were thanking God for all the things that he had given them, even in the midst of all this horror, you know, people starving to death, getting beaten to death, shot. And Betsy started thanking God for the fleas that were in their little dormitory. And fleas, Corrie was like, are you crazy? Why are we thankful for the fleas? You know, they're everywhere, fleas, lice, I mean, disease. And Betsy was like, no, we're going to thank God for the fleas. So Corrie was like, fine, you know, thank you, God, for the fleas. You know, are you happy now? One of the things that Corrie and Betsy were able to do is they were able to have Bible studies in their little barracks. They were able to share with the women, as they're all crowded together, they were able to share with a lot of these women who Jesus was, who the Messiah was, and what he had done. And they really saw some amazing miracles here in this concentration camp. One of the things was that they noticed was that the guard never came into the barracks. So they were able to freely share. And the guards never came in to see what they were doing. And I don't know how Corrie ended up hearing this. I think she overheard the guards talking or something like that. But the reason that the guards never came into the barracks was because of all the fleas. Because they didn't want to get fleas. They didn't want to get bit. And Corrie, when she heard that, she was just like, wow. You know, it's like talking about being thankful for all things and in all circumstances. Thankful for fleas. I think that there were people that were ripe for harvest that Paul would not have had the opportunity to share with if he hadn't ended up being stuck in house arrest. But because he was there in Rome, he was thankful. He was able to see God in every single detail. And God had a heart for the slaves, the soldiers, the noblemen, the noble women in Rome. And Paul was able to bring the gospel message to them. At the very end of the book of Philippians, Paul says, all the saints greet you, especially those of Caesar's household. I think it's quite funny that because of where he was, that Caesar's house heard about Jesus Christ. And that there was salvation that was brought because of Paul's circumstances. You know, it's like we just don't know the circumstances that we're in, what God is, how God is going to use it. And when we're thankful, we get to see those details. They don't glaze over. We're not focused on the things that we're complaining about. We can actually see God work when we're thankful. And I wonder often the things that we miss when we're not thankful, when we're focused on our own issues, on the things that are going on with us, instead of having that thankful heart for the things that he's done for us. Alrighty. I'm just about done here, actually. The worship team wants to come forward. I want everybody to stand up because we're going to do a little bit of response here while the worship team's coming forward. I want you to stand up and I want you to tell the person next to you at least three things that you are thankful for. At least three things.